Anarchy, constant fighting, defeats, slaughters. The whole of the land was constantly at war with one another, the tribes killing each other without mercy. Something had to give. King Saul and his men attacked the Philistines once more, and this time came off really badly. Jonathan, David's bosom friend, and his brothers were killed, and the king Saul was wounded rather than face capture. In the end, he threw himself on his sword. David, with his men, came away from the Philistines, and David was anointed as the king. It took him a long time to unite the warring tribes under his reign, and their last task to bring the tribes to heel was to lay siege to the city of Jerusalem, which was ruled at that time by the tribe called the Jebusites, and they were well defended behind its walls. They shouted to David's army circling the city, "Ah, even the blind and the crippled could hold this city." And time and time again, without any success, David's army tried to storm the walls and failed. But once they realised that different tactics would be needed to be employed, they crawled along the aqueducts and the tunnels beneath the cities on their hands and knees in the darkness, and by doing that took the Jebusites by surprise and conquered the city. The city was theirs. All of Israel, now reunited, turned out to greet the ark that David brought up to the city, singing and dancing and shouting. It was wonderful after all the slaughter and bloodshed. From onwards, then, Jerusalem would be the home of the Israelites, the capital, the place where they would build the temple of God. David danced in front of the people, stripped down to a loincloth, leaping and dancing before God because they were so happy. David's wife was less than impressed by his undignified prancing about, not fit behaviour for a king. But David wasn't doing it for her. And in a dream, David was told by God the news that one of his heirs would build a kingdom that would last forever. And all this was going to come from an heir in the line of David. Despite all the things that he had done, and he knew all the wrongs that he'd done to others, he had been sinful from the time his mother conceived him. And most of his wrongdoings were unoriginal. And as the king settled down to life in Jerusalem with his family, one day, it was spring, when the kings go off to war further afield to different countries. And David was looking down from the palace roof when he saw her. He had wives enough already, he had sons and daughters, he had all a man could want, except her. She was beautiful. She was enchanting. She was enough to make him lose his mind with desire. She was called Bathsheba. She was another man's wife, but David didn't care. Uriah, her husband, was a Hittite, one of David's special guard, and he was away fighting wars. Under law, soldiers were not allowed to return to their wives while they were on active duty. And Uriah was a man of great principle. So while he slept in tents between the city walls, David made love to his wife in his palace. The affair reached a conclusion when Bathsheba became pregnant. David multiplied his wrongdoings one upon the other. He covered one evil with another. He sent Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, on a dangerous mission and gave orders for him to be left stranded where the fighting was the thickest. It was as if David had murdered him himself. And the plan worked. David had Bathsheba to himself and had sent, to all intents and purposes, Uriah to his death. So there he was, thinking he'd got away with things, when he was visited by Nathan, a highly respected prophet, who said to David, "There are two men in your kingdom, your majesty. One is rich and owns whole herds of sheep, while the other owns nothing but one small lamb which he has raised since birth. It's all he has in the world. Yet the rich man took it from him to serve to a guest, rather than slaughter one of his own flocks." David was outraged. "Whoever it was, he deserves to die. I swear by God that whoever did this should pay back four times as much because of his cruelty." It took David some time to realise that what Nathan was really talking about was him. God had made him king over Israel. God had given him his kingdom, his wives, everything. If he'd said it wasn't enough, then he'd given him even more. But instead, he'd stole from someone else and murdered to cover his crime. However, God still honoured his promise of a descendant who would rule forever. Soon Bathsheba, whose first child had died, gave birth to another son, whom David named Solomon. And David thanked God that he had been forgiven, that he was contrite and realised the error of his ways. And David had other sons by other wives. His eldest son, Absalom, hated his half-brother Amnon with a vengeance. Amnon had fallen in love with his half-sister Tamar, and in his lust he raped her. After the attack, he wanted nothing more to do with her and had her thrown from his house. Absalom sought only revenge from that moment on. And hatched a plot. One day he went to his father, David the king. "Father, I'm having my entire herd sheared. Come and join me in the celebrations. Bring all my brothers, all your courtiers, be my guests." "Not now, Absalom, we're a bit busy. Next year, perhaps," said David. No, you must come now." "How do you mean we must?" "Well, this is very important to me." David said, "I don't understand, Absalom. What with all this fuss? You've never been bothered with parties and sheep shearing before." "If you're determined, father, to make me look stupid, then fine, but at least let my half-brother Amnon come." "Well, yes, fine, if it will shut you up, certainly." The party, so-called, went exactly as Absalom had planned it. He waited till Amnon was dulled with wine and had his servants murder him. David was distraught. "Absalom, my own son, killing his half-brother, and then had to flee to the land of a foreign king. But nevertheless, I miss him so terribly. I have to forgive him and let him return to me. But it's taken so long, 2 years before I could even be in the same room as him." The eldest son, Absalom, was without doubt the most handsome man in all of Israel. He was very popular. People would do anything for him. But he was very ambitious, something that David never really understood. David was blind to his son's ambitions. He didn't look properly or listen properly. Didn't realise how far Absalom was willing to go. And of course, Absalom had his own agenda. He set himself up as a judge, offering advice laced with flattery, winning favours from those he helped, and always making sure that they owed him, a debt he intended them to repay in full. One time he asked David permission to go to Hebron to worship God. Consent was given, and as soon as he was out of sight, he had his trumpet sound, gathering men from all over the country, and it was at Hebron that Absalom declared himself king, forcing David to retreat until he could pull himself together and gather his forces. An inter-family war was about to hit Israel. David split his men into three groups and faced Absalom and his army. Joab, his military chief, took one of the groups, his brother Abishai another, and Ittai, a foreigner who owed him nothing yet remained faithful, the third. David gave express orders that Absalom was to be brought to him unharmed. This was going to be the hardest of all David's many battles. The battle took place in the forest of Ephraim. The fighting was close and brutal, sword against sword, hand to hand, as each man struggled through the forest. And all the while, Joab pushed on, relentlessly hacking his way towards the target of his anger, Absalom. Absalom was very recognisable, shouting and encouraging his men, "I am the king now, do you hear me? The king, you will do as I will command," as he said, with Joab coming towards him. "Surrender," said Joab, "in the name of King David, surrender or die." "You fool," said Absalom, "my father will never harm me." And so, with his men in defeat, Absalom fled the battle, perhaps hoping to regroup and attack at a later date. With Joab's troops at his heels, he fled into the darkest part of the forest. And it was there that he was snarled on a branch of a tree and left hanging, trapped by his reins and his armour. And eventually David and his men found him. There he was, hanging in the tree. "Why didn't you kill him when you found him?" said David. "Ah," said Joab, "standing orders from yourself, sir, said he's to be caught unharmed. And I say, 10 pieces of silver to the man who kills him." And there and then, Joab and his men finished off Absalom. Order was restored. Absalom was dead. The kingdom was safe. Messengers ran to bring the news. They even called it good news. But all David had ever cared about was Absalom. His soldiers returned to Jerusalem, not as victors, but as cowards. David was still king. He had a duty to the people. There would be other battles, other failures, other victories. God had been with him from the day he took to the fields, tending his father's sheep, and set him up as a ruler over his people Israel. But his past misdemeanours kept haunting him into old age. He kept thinking that he had done nothing to deserve the honour. "The king," he said to himself, "the king who rules with justice is like a great light shining after the storm. And this is how God will bless my descendants, because God has made me an everlasting agreement. Soon I will go the way of all the earth, and it will be my son Solomon who will succeed me." And David breathed his last.